Will senators please take their seats? We have quorum. Will alternates please come forward if you haven't to sign in? Okay, first item on the agenda will be the approval of the agenda, which is right up here. All in favor? Okay, so moved. All in favor?
Aye.
Against? None. Abstentions? None. Motion carries. Item number two will be the minutes of the September 17th meeting. Again, they're right here behind me. Questions? Deletions? Additions? Any objections to unanimous consent? Okay, motion carries. Item number three, announcements. Let's do this. I'm going to ask the guest speaker to come first, and then we will do any announcements, etc. Okay, let's do it that way. I do want to caution today's guest speaker, and I'll tell him that last year, everyone, I think, threw him... Better listen to this. They threw him, because he's a first year, they threw him some softball lob questions. And I heard this through the grapevine. This year, I'm hearing through the grapevine that the senators are going to be throwing high, hard, fastball questions. So there's the caution. With that, I'd like to introduce today's guest speaker, President Félix Matos Rodríguez.
With that introduction, right? Delighted to be here, and I want to thank Professor Sanudo for the invite. And what he suggested I do is, he said, you know, why don't you do like a state of the college kind of thing, which seemed to be a little bit sort of presumptuous. So I'll mention a couple of things which I think are important information for us to know, a couple of processes which I think are important that the entire campus community is aware of. I'm going to make an announcement at the end, but I also want to leave time for Q&A. Actually, I didn't know there were softballs, but the part that I enjoyed the most last time was the Q&A, and I look forward to enjoying that again and answer questions either about the things that I talked about or all the other things that you might want to mention. Let me just do a couple of things, and I know some of you might have heard this, but I want to make sure that we're on the same page. I want to talk a little bit about our enrollment, because you know, more and more our budgeting and our resources are tied up to our enrollment, as you know, some of the historic state disinvestment in higher ed continues. And on the enrollment front, we have, and let me get my glasses, some good news and some challenging news, right? The good news is that we have about 500 more students than we had last year, right? We had last year on the undergraduate side, we have 15,772 students in the undergraduate side. This fall, we have 16,397 students. So a trend that we saw last fall, which was that we had an increased number of undergraduates wanting to come to us either as first-time freshmen or as transfers, continues. So that is a good positive trend. We're basically flat on the graduate student side. Last fall, we had 3,525 graduate students. This fall, we have 3,536. So we had about 11 more in the fall, right? So we have more undergraduates and graduates than last year. So that is the positive news. The less positive news is that we had hope, and when we did the budget for the year, we had hope to have about 411 more students than that. right? So we have, and I know that people will say we didn't meet the enrollment target. That is the case, but we have more students than we had last year. Okay, so enrollment continues to grow. The target that we set for ourselves, that we used to create our budget, fell short by 411 students. And that is why we had to do some budget adjustments in addition to the $4 million that got cut as a result of the governor not putting the maintenance of effort funding for CUNY in this year's budget. Right? So that added. We are hoping, and this happened last year, to pick up some of the enrollment in the spring. Right? So the budget that we presented is one that hopes for very aggressive numbers against in the spring. It happened last year, and we're working very hard to do it again this year. Mm-hmm. Because if not, we might need to do some adjustments too in the spring if we don't meet that enrollment target. Mm-hmm. And what you can see, and we have our new Vice President for Enrollment and Retention, Richard Alvarez, who's in the back. Richard, say hi. Right? What? So Richard is working on a number of these numbers. Some of the students, for example, that were in good academic standing who were here last spring and didn't come last fall, right? Some of them had debt, so you can make an argument that debt maybe made them not want to re-enroll, but there was a substantial number of them that had no debt and were in good academic standing. Traditionally, those are students that should have been back with us again. So we're trying to have a campaign to reach out to them, to have them come back, right? And then if they don't want to come back or they went elsewhere, to gather the information as to why that happened so we can use that to improve our programming and things that we might need to do to be able to retain the students. So the overall trend is last couple of years we continue to grow, except in the graduate students that remains either flat or descending. But on the undergraduate side, we continue to be an attractive place for students to come, and it signals that we might need to do some work on the retention side. Right? I mentioned enrollment because enrollment is tied to resources and to the budget. As many of you know, and I think I have shared clearly in the PMB committee and other forums, that in the initial budget negotiations last year, the governor did not include the funds for the maintenance of effort. That is the money that goes to whatever additional payments we make to your health benefits, the steps that some members get based on the contract, a number of those costs that always increase from year to year, which for CUNY total, right, there were $51 million, right? The governor did not include that. It did not get covered in the negotiation with the Assembly and the Senate, which is the other part in the budget where those things happen. So that hold continued. And that hold continued for the senior colleges. Right? The mayor, in his budget, covered that part for the community college. I think you are aware that in the CUNY budget, even though we're one system, the state funds most of the four-year colleges, and the city funds the community college. So the mayor, consistent with historic support of CUNY, which he campaigned and he's been consistent doing that, said, well, you know, the part in the budget that I'm responsible for is the community college. So the central office took a larger proportional cut. They did a 6% cut. Our cut would have been 4% out of the $41 million, ended up being 3, and that meant about $4 million out of our budget that came out. So the exercises that we did to be able to meet our budget come as a result of the state reduction, which is anticipated, right, and the unanticipated not meeting the enrollment target. We hope to mitigate some of that with better numbers in the spring. We did it last year. Right? But that's the budget scenario. And the way that we went about in dealing with the budget gap is that we protected, and we did, let me just get my numbers here so I don't, we protected the adjunct budget, So the adjunct budget that was projected for this year, we did not touch. That did not receive cuts. We went back and we asked that some of the estimates, you know, that people looked at them a bit more closely, because sometimes you estimate it when it's closer to the time, you're able to get a better figure. So that part of money we didn't touch. Most of the cuts were done on OTPS. And when we went back to the divisions asking for OTPS, we went and we did, we looked at the historic spending patterns in all the departments. And we went back to a couple of years in which using the amount they used about 2 years ago. Right? So when we did the first calculation, we also did it not by a random, everybody cut whatever, because if it happened to be that your unit spent more last year than others just because of historical patterns, right? A cut across the board would have affected you more. We wanted to see the traditional spending patterns and use that as a better way to deal with an uncomfortable situation. So we used that. We also cut on the PS, which is the largest chunk of the budget. So we took a very hard look. In many cases, when the budget is done year to year, folks that are in Travia are not accounted for, so they might appear in the budget, but you know, in the next year they're not really appear because they're not here with us. So we looked, we took a very granular look at all the budgets, trying to see positions that could be delayed in hiring, or so in some cases lines that have been vacant for 2 years and nobody had taken them. So we're hoping, right, that next year, either because as a result of the governor's budget or the negotiation with the Senate and the Assembly, those funds from the maintenance of effort are restored. There is a bill in front of the governor for his signature that mandates him to do that moving forward. It is unclear whether the governor will sign that or not. The money that we would have received, which was also about $3 or $4 million from this year's tuition increase, right, was also set aside. And this is being done by all the colleges. The chancellor asked for this, in the case that no new money was allocated by the city and the state to fund the signing of a contract, right? If hopefully we get a contract signed, that may have some retroactive pay depending on, you know, what gets negotiated, right? Traditionally, that money has been put forward by both the governor and the mayor in most past negotiations. This is the first time in which one party is saying there's going to be no new money. Whatever you want to do in that front needs to be done with funds that you already have. So the chancellor asked all of us to protect that money, not spend it, right? In case that at the end of the day there's no new money, that can be used, right? So that's another set of money which we would have had available to us, which is being protected for something that I think all of us can be in solidarity with, right? We all want the contract to be signed and to have increases. So that money is there for that reason. So those two things, so those three forces impacted our budget. The cuts from the governor, the protection of what had been new money coming from the tuition increase, and the fact that we had based our budget on a higher projection of students coming in the fall. And so I just wanted to sort of clarify that to the best of my ability. A couple of things that I want to, and maybe some of you have been to the town halls, and I want to thank those of you who participated. But as you know, we are on the last leg of the strategic planning process. We want to be able to roll out a plan that was in part conceptualized by the time President Meiskens left in 2013. We sort of retook that and played some with. We've done some reporting, we made some changes, and we want to be able to have it ready really by November so that we can give it to the Middle States Committee so they can use them in the work they need to do for the self-study. So as I think I shared with you before, we have somewhat of an aggressive timetable, but it's aggressive because of what we need to do for middle states. Some of you have participated in the town halls. Not everybody could be available on those two dates. So I want to make sure that A, if you want to see the most current version of the plan, and it's been changed through time, I think I shared some components of it in the Senate at the end of last academic year. So even that which I shared with you has been evolving, in part thanks to the comments that you and others have made. So if you want to get the most current version, it's on the website. It's qc.cuny.edu/strat plan. So qc.cuny.edu/strat plan. Strat plan. So there, and actually there's a link to what was finalized in 2013 if somebody wants to see the difference between the two plans. There is an email for you to send comments for us to consider for those who could not attend and are reading now or attended and want to comment. And that email is strategicplan@qc.cuny.edu. strategicplan@qc.cuny.edu. We want to be able to take your feedback, but again, we hope to be able to bring closure to the process by November so that we can be ready for middle states. I mentioned Richard Alvarez joining the senior management team as the VP for enrollment and retention. We also have a deputy chief of staff, Glenda Grace, who used to be the chief of staff, is now also the general counsel, right? And as talented as she is, doing two jobs will be a recipe for not too many things happening. So we brought in a deputy chief of staff and someone who's going to be working also on strategic project, Dr. Odalis Diaz-Pinheiro, who used to be playing a similar role when I was at Osto. So she joined us a couple of months ago. And three other things, and then I'll open it up for questions. Since I mentioned the contract, I know that's very much in all of our minds. I think that you have seen the statements by the Chancellor and by the Chair of the Board of Trustees, Benno Smith, about their interest in making sure that we can put this behind us and start negotiating the next contract, given that this is 6 years behind, that they're working very, very hard in a very complicated political environment to be able to get the resources to put forth the best economic offer that they can. Obviously, it's challenging to do that when you don't have a set number to do. But I do know, because the Chancellor mentions this in all the meetings with the Council of Presidents and others, that it is something that is very much up on his mind, that he knows that it's his turn at bat. He's aware that it is his responsibility to get it done, and he's not bucking at that responsibility. But while there's a window for being able to extract additional resources that can provide a better contract, I think it's in everybody's interest to be able to see if we can take advantage of that window, right? But I think you know that it's a complicated for us to get a contract. The budget office in the city and the budget office in the governors, they need to be in accord, and that sometimes happens, and that sometimes happens less quickly, right? And we've been sort of caught in that situation. I also want to mention to the campus community two processes that, one is very much connected also with the budget process and the governor. In this year's budget, the governor added a couple of things. You know, one was a request that both SUNY and CUNY explore experiential opportunities, educational opportunities for their students. And both systems explore what they're doing in the field of service learning, internships, all of those things, and to ponder the possibility as to whether, for example, a graduation requirement in the state is desirable, meaning that the state of New York will say every graduate in the state of New York would need to be able to have one kind of experiential internship, you know, there'd be a list of categories before they graduate. The Board of Trustees took that and charged the Chancellor to produce a report that would provide an inventory of what we're doing now in each of the campuses, right, and to ask the campuses how they felt about a requirement like that or any ideas associated with that entire field. So I want to make sure that there's clarity, and I know that the Provost Betsy sent an email out asking for folks to provide information and their comments on that. We might also, a little bit later, have some kind of campus-wide conversation on that. We didn't want to do it now because we had the ones for the strategic plan and middle states, and we felt that the campus was town hall out, right? But I want to make sure that, A, people know that there is no mandate from the state, right? That there's no position at CUNY regarding that other than the governor has mandated us to look at this, let's look at it, and then treat it as an opportunity. Take advantage of the inventory and say, you're interested in service learning? Well, let me tell you, that would cost X. You're interested in doing what? Well, this will cost that, right? And be able to turn a question into an opportunity. I think that there'd be consensus on campus that all these things are incredibly worthwhile to the students, right? I think what we need to do is think hard about how they align with curriculum, how is the best way to offer them. You know, obviously the graduation question is a complicated one, but you want to keep people from graduating. I mean, so, but I want to make sure that people understand that it is a conversation. There is no set position in the governor's office, to the best of my knowledge, in the central office for sure, clearly not on the campus, right? So we want to take stock of what we have and have a conversation. I know some people will say, is this, you know, window dressing? Is this something that's been decided already and you're asking, right? If it's been the case, I haven't been included, right? So to the best of my knowledge, like I said, the Chancellor sees this as an opportunity. We see in the campus too to take advantage, to find out what we're doing, how can it be improved, and what kind of resources it will take and what kind of restructuring it will be needed on different aspects like curriculum, okay? And the email went out, and I do have the link, or Betsy has the link if you have questions as to, you know, where do you need to submit information. The other process that's going on is that CUNY is also embarking in a conversation about a strategic framework. It's one of the projects that the Chancellor has taken very seriously. The Chancellor himself has been chairing those committee meetings, so it hasn't been delegated to someone. The Chancellor is very actively participating. He's made it clear that different from a strategic plan on a campus, right, what he wants to produce is what he calls a framework, which is something fairly broad, right? And then within that, campuses, based on their own decisions, criteria, realities, will be able to carve their own individual plans. That he's trying to provide the broadest tent possible, you know, with some guidance and some, you know, strategic thinking, right? And then have the campuses connect with that framework. I have been selected to be part of that committee. And like I said, it is a very serious process, and there's no better sign that, you know, the Chancellor didn't delegate this to someone, right? There's a consulting firm, as you would expect, but he's actively participating, and what he wants to get is a sense of, you know, what CUNY should be moving forward. There is a website. If you want to look at the latest documents that have been produced, and a lot of them are drafts of different conversations and information gathering, so there's not, you know, a lot of very concrete things, but he wants campuses to participate And they're going to be starting some focus groups, and they're going to be doing some electronic consultations and maybe some visits on the campuses. But I do want to give you that website, and I have so many websites with me that, here we go, www.cuny.edu, and I will send all of this to Manny later so that you can have them, they can be in the minutes and they can be easy to, www.cuny.edu/21st century with a capital C, CUNY, all in caps. So after the slash is 21st century with a capital C, CUNY, all caps, in one single word, right? So I encourage all of you to participate and to share your ideas, your visions, your concerns. There might be more specific events that I'll be, you know, bringing up on part of the committee, but the chancellor is interested in hearing out from the campuses. I'm going to stop there, take questions, and then make an additional announcement at the end. So happy to take questions, hard, soft, or medium, on these things or others.
Hi, I'm Yensun from Political Science. Okay, we always, on this campus, we always hear the word enrollment, mm-hmm. but very seldom do we hear the word how do we help them in the job market, post-graduation, employment. So I'm not asking you about what to do about this. I have a proposal, so I'm asking you if you would act on it. So that is to improve our career office and to centralize an online system where we can put all the internships, all the job listings in the central system online. But more importantly, when students go to a posting, right, we should have a place or button that if they click, they can submit their cover letter and their CV, their resume right away. And we should also more actively go to this, maybe not the big companies, but middle and small companies, and try to get their job postings, all right? More actively seek them. Anyway, just to have this better system. So that this would be ultimately, I would say, the better system to recruit and retain our students. Because our students, probably most of them, may not be from middle-class families with professional parents, may not have the savvy to know where to get the jobs. So I would say this would be very important, and if you would act on it.
Okay. Obviously, I think that you are talented and sophisticated enough to know that I cannot make a promise to act on something that I don't have the details, right? But I think that you're presenting a very common sense proposal, both in the sense of and I think part of the inventory that this exercise will do will help us understand the different things that we have on campus and where they're housed, right? Because some are housed in career services, some are housed in departments, some departments do some other career things embedded in curriculum, like the folks in education, where the folks need to go teach, right? So there's a lot of variation. And I think the important thing is to centralize the information we have so that it's easier for the students to navigate, which I think goes back to your point, to facilitate the contacts that they can make, to be more aggressively seeking connections with companies, which require resources. You need people to be knocking on doors or collecting things. That can be done through the alumni too, so we're having some conversation on that front. But I agree with you that we need to have a better way to centralize information. I don't think that what we do needs to be centralized, as long as it's being done well, right? I think the information, so it's easier for the student, needs to be centralized, which I think is consistent with what you suggest. And then we can also use that information to improve, right, in terms of the offerings that we have. But it's clearly something that we're looking at. It's something that, for example, I already have an alumni who's giving money for an additional line that can be working with alumni in certain fields. So it's something that I've been out there trying to get additional resources so we have more people taking care of the students and also connecting with the employers. So while, since I'm a man of my word, I cannot tell you that I'm going to act exactly on that, I do want to tell you that is something that I spent some time looking at my first year, trying to see where we are, and that I coincide that there are better ways in which we can centralize, use technology, and get additional resources so that we provide more opportunities to our students, let it be internships, service learning, and different kinds of things. So it's a qualified yes to what you're saying.
Alan Ludman, School of Earth and Environmental Sciences and College Senator at Large. Experiential learning. I think I know what it means. I'm not sure what the governor means it to be. And then I looked at some of the definitions of things at Queen's College that are being considered as experiential learning. And it covers a far wider field than I would have considered in my definition. And do we have any concept at all of how the governor will consider our definition of what experiential learning is? Has there been any conversation between the governor's office and CUNY as far as defining experiential learning?
Okay. I can tell you about it because there's a task force on that, and guess which president the chancellor asked to be in that committee also. I'm there. So if you don't see me around a lot lately, it's because I'm busy. So a couple of things. The governor didn't define, I mean, there was some language, and I can get that to you about some of that meaning. There was some fuzziness there. We've done two things. On this case, SUNY has been working on defining this and working at it a little bit longer. So we got some of the definitions they used, and we used it for this consultation. Also working on the premise, right, that whatever definitions we send to the campuses, which seems to be the ones that you're alluding to, we will get feedback that said, this is too broad, this is too narrow, this needs to be expanded, but that was part of the conversation, right? That and the feeling was to, A, go broader initially than to be more limiting, right? To put that as a subject of the conversation. And then also, since SUNY, and they've been working with the governor on this for a little while, copy some of that, at least to be able to respond, right? But I think that that concern is legitimate and should be raised, right? I mean, obviously, it doesn't mean the same thing to everybody. And if it's going to be something meaningful, and if we're going to be thinking about requirements and things like that, then I think we really need to get very specific so that we can have things that are of real value and quality to the students and not just, you know, something that anybody can check and then it's meaningless. So that's a little bit of the history there. I think, as you can imagine, in some of these things, if it's not clearly framed, you rather do your own framing and send it and hope that what you end up sending ends up being what gets accepted, as opposed to asking and then getting something you don't like, right? But a lot of the language that you will see there came from conversations with counterparts in SUNY who've been working on this before. That doesn't make it better or worse, but it gives a little bit of the history of the process. Does that help? Okay, so I'm sticking around. If somebody wants to ask me in private, I'd be happy to take that too. So now I'm very happy to make an announcement, which in the case of any president, and we just came from, and actually I think we should give the new Olga and Constantine Brown Endowed Professor and Directorship of the Byzantine and Modern Greek Center, right? That's his new title. And That came as a result from a $1 million gift from an alum, and we just had the ceremony this afternoon at the at the center. A great, you know, Queens College story of folks that met on campus and of Greek origin. And Olga was a graduate from our second graduating class. We had her sister who was older and was telling the story that she went to Hunter because there was no Queens College when she had to make a decision, right? And that the sister was the youngest, decided to come to the new CUNY campus back in 1937. So a beautiful, beautiful story and highlighting the great work that the center has done. So as you can imagine, donations, all those things are always, you know, music to the president's ear, bringing resources to the campus. So I am going to announce that a very esteemed and dear Queens College alum has decided to donate $1 million in his will. He and his wife, who's also a Queens College alum, the half of the money will go towards student scholarships, and half of the money will go towards faculty and staff development, right? That is the really good news. Since it's part of somebody's will, and it's someone that we love, right? Whoever is sitting here 30 years from now will reap the benefits of that, right? Because obviously I am in no hurry to see this phenomenal gift materialize, right? Because it has some downside for part of the equation. But the person who's doing the donation is someone who's well known to this group. He's been associated with this Senate since 1970. Right? And that has to be some kind, we need to look at that, there has to be some kind of Guinness World Record of someone associated with a university senate. But it's our dear parliamentarian, Dave Fields. And so I would like to, on behalf of the entire college, thank Dave for his gift. Many of you will know Dave for many, many years of not just the work here in the Senate, but always staying present for anything that has to do with Queens College. I knew him obviously before coming here. He's been a great source of advice, of mentorship, of inspiration, and of really embracing and loving this institution for all that this great college has done and can do. But for those of you who might not know Dave that well, he was a student here back in the late 60s. He was getting ready to graduate, but he decided that it was better to protest the Vietnam War than to graduate. So he stuck around and, you know, took over buildings and was active in a couple of other things, right? Which, if you want a copy, take over buildings in Manhattan, okay? If any of you want to, you know, protest and take over a building, you'll get more media coverage in Manhattan. Don't take a building here, right? Not that I am biased in any way, but, you know, I'm just talking from a to getting your message out, right? The media will do that better in Manhattan. But very active, ended up graduating from Queens College, became the history of our Senate dates to some of the conversations that occurred on campus as a result of some of those turbulent times. He was then part of the Senate as a student beginning in 1970. He transitioned quickly to be part of the administration. Then President Murphy made him a special assistant, recognizing that talent in student government. And he's remained connected to Queens throughout President Murphy, then President Cohen, working as the director of the student union, being very active part. If you ever want to get the history as to why the student union is set up the way that it is and what's the logic behind it and what's some of the history of the engagement of the students in that process, Dave Fields and others will be able to fill you in. But we have something very unique in terms of the acknowledging the role of students on our campus, and that building is very much a reminder of all of that. Went to law school, remained connected to CUNY, Then President Murphy became Chancellor Murphy and then took Dale over to the central office and made him a special counsel. Was connected also with the CUNY Law School. He was part of the people that worked in making the CUNY Law School possible, and he was one of the first deans there. You remain. You're still part of the faculty, right, in the law school, and then has continued to be part of the Chancellor's office with Matthew Goldstein becoming a senior university dean. And again, if somebody exemplifies all that's good about CUNY and about Queens College, about shared governance, about conversations, about putting your heart and everything where your mouth is and where your ideas is, they feel so. And when we talked about this, he was adamant. You know that the normal process for this is that we need to do some paperwork, it gets approved here, it goes to Central CUNY, and it goes to the Board of Trustees for an official announcement. Dave being Dave said, you know, I'm a lawyer, I know all that, but I want the announcement to be made in my casa, in my home. And my home here is Queens College and the Senate, so he asked me to sort of bring the news to you today. So again, Dave, thank you so much for that. And I think that allows me to get off the podium. You go back to being parliamentarian, and Manny goes back to running the show. Again, thank you so much, and thank you, Dave.
Thank you very much, sir.
I didn't know I was standing next to a dollar man. Okay, I am going to call for announcements now, but as we're doing that, please, anyone who has not signed in, come in and sign up now. Announcements?
Thank you. Laura Silverman, Academic Advising. I am letting everyone know and reminding some of you the Major Minor Fair is October 21st. It's a Wednesday from 12 to 2, fourth floor of the Student Union. Today was the deadline for departments and programs and services to let us know that they're attending. So if you would please get in touch with us to let us know if you are attending, if we haven't heard from you yet. We hope to have a fantastic student showing as we did last year, over 560 students at the fair. Thank you.
Hi, Catherine Profeta from Drama, Theater, and Dance, and I'm here with a simple announcement about the departmental production of The Cherry Orchard by Anton Chekhov. It's a really lovely production. I've been in rehearsals for it. It's going to run from Thursday, October 29th to Sunday, November 8th. That's over 2 weekends. Curtain times are different depending on the day, so I direct you all to the departmental website or to the website for the Kupferberg Center for the Arts for information on the times. Student tickets are $10, faculty tickets are $16, and we're going to have a special $5 Friday for students on October 30th. That's a Friday. Thanks so much.
Further announcements. Well, I'd like to follow up on something the president mentioned about experiential learning. We are in the process, the Senate is, through the Undergraduate Curriculum Committee, setting up a subcommittee on experiential learning. Anyone who is interested, you can contact me. My email address is right there, or Phyllis, just below it. Call us, stop by the Senate office. We're now in the process of doing that. And as a matter of fact, our first Senate-wide email, and it went out this morning. We had one or two glitches with it, but I think now, as you go back, you will see that there was some material now sent from Ava Fernandez, Center for Teaching and Learning. We sent it out to all the senators. Please don't think that we want you to be on the committee, but we really, what we want is you to spread the word, to get maybe more of your fellow students, to get more of your fellow faculty members, colleagues, to get on this committee. We're trying to look at the experiential learning as something that's going to benefit Queens College. I know when it was announced back, I think it was last March, in the governor's budget, everyone moaned and groaned. I think after we had a chance to look at it, he said, this might be an opportunity to take this concept of experiential learning and make it better for all of us. So that's what we're trying to do now. This subcommittee is open to anyone on campus. Subcommittee structure is a little bit different from committee structure. So please, anyone who's interested, get in touch with us, get in touch with Ava, but please let us know because this is something we want to get going very quickly. On that idea of electronic mailings, in a way, the experiential learning email that we sent out to everyone was a bit of an experiment, and I hope everyone got it, and if you didn't, let us know. But this is the way we want to start delivering Senate materials from now on. So after today, this is what's going to happen. Every senator, every alternate, every delegate, every ex officio is going to get the Senate materials in electronic format. People who signed up to get it in paper, and if you haven't done this, come at the end of the meeting, sign up. If you want it in paper, we will send it to you in paper. We will have, just like today, extra paper available for anyone that wants. And we will send it to everyone, as I said, electronically, and the people who want it in paper, you will be getting a paper product. This allows us to get material out much faster and to communicate with everyone in a much more timely fashion. So please, again, sign up, electronic or paper, and then we will fulfill your request there. Any further announcements? No. Okay, let's go on. Special motions, there are none. Let's go to committee reports. Item A, Undergraduate Curriculum Committee. It'll be coming up here on the screen.
I'd like to move the minutes of the September 17th, 2015 meeting of the Undergraduate Curriculum Committee and ask for unanimous consent. That's my understanding, yes. You can take any 30 credits in the department. I don't know the answer to that question. It didn't come up in the discussion. Sure. Do you know? We have somebody from the department that can answer. Terrific.
Yeah, hi. I'm Mary Foote. I'm actually the divisional representative, not the department, not that that matters. But I coordinate the undergraduate program, so I am fairly familiar with the requirements. First of all, the 2.75 GPA was a requirement of overall credits, not in the necessarily only in the co-major. The co-major, whatever the co-major GPA requirements were whatever they were, and we didn't monitor that. What we did monitor was whether or not the co-major was completed or near completion based on a sign-off from the co-major department. Now, which will cause us more work, will be that we will have to track the 30 credits, that students will have to list the courses that they've taken and that they plan to take in the final semester. And then instead of depending on the co-major department to monitor that, which we have in the past, we'll have to monitor that ourselves. So it's a little bit extra work on our part, but in order to speed the time to graduation for our students who typically do not graduate in 4 years, we are willing to put in that extra effort. And there will be a concentration area that we will monitor, the 30 credits in a liberal arts or science department. Well, they can't avoid statistics because that's a prerequisite requirement to get into the program. But you're right in other respects that they could avoid conceivably upper-level courses. And yes, that is part of the problem, if you want to frame it as a problem, that this particular proposal would result in, I guess I'd say. Yeah, I understand that, and just let me make this comment. The students will have two options. One will be to complete a full major, but that won't be required. The other will be this 30 credits. And so there are advising issues involved here. For example, in mathematics, it is tremendously advantageous to have a mathematics major on the transcript itself. And in other respects, it's advantageous to have other majors listed as a major on the transcript. So students will be advised that there are advantages to actually double majoring, but it's an advising issue, and ultimately the decision would be up to them.
I'd like to echo Dean Savage's comments. This is of great concern. There's more to a major than just taking courses. Some majors are very highly structured, and we have introductory courses, intermediate courses, we have capstone courses, and we don't consider a student well-trained in our discipline unless they've completed the whole pile, and each adds to it, and in a term I know you're familiar with, we scaffold these things. We know exactly what we're leading to. We know what we want the outcome to be. I also am concerned that we're making a precedent here and that a student will graduate with an education degree, but not another degree. I mean, is secondary ed on its way? I mean, secondary ed has other problems. I mean, if you wanted to teach science, you better have some science courses. But just as the MAT, you can take 15 credits of any groups of sciences, that's not going to make a science teacher at secondary school to me. I'm also concerned with students who burn out as teachers. And I understand the burnout rate for elementary teachers in the New York City school system is significant. And now they don't have anything to fall back on. What they have is an undergraduate degree in education, but they don't have a degree in sociology. They don't have a degree in history. They don't have a degree in geology or environmental science. What do they do? This may be good for us. They may have to come back and take more courses as non-matriculated students. That's not helping the students. I personally will vote against this.
Someone else? Steve?
Stephen Grover, philosophy. I echo all those remarks, but I have just a friendly, I hope, editorial amendment. I'm concerned, this is on page three, obviously, that with the replacement of the term programs by departments, this seems to me we should have either programs, because that's more general than departments, or we should say department or programs. Because as it's written, you know, religious studies, for example, you can major in that, but it's not a department, and there are quite a lot of programs that are not departments. So I just think for correctness, that should read one of the liberal arts and sciences departments or programs.
I think that was the intent. We take that as...
Okay, there's a motion on the floor for unanimous consent. First, we have to vote on that. All in favor of unanimous consent, then?
Say yes, and then no.
Well, the motion passes, then.
No, Manny, you've got to ask for yeses, and then you ask for noes.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, Ken, do you want to take the amendment then?
Well, the idea of the amendment is to say departments or programs. Yeah.
All right, any further amendments? Who's in favor of the amendments then? Say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? None? All right, the amendment carries. Now we're back to the question, the motion, the original motion. All in favor?
And that is to remove... To separate out item 5, which is the early child education, and the rest of the minutes stand. I just want to understand that.
All right, so then we're to remove 5. Okay. Does anyone want to debate that?
I support what the three chairs of departments said before. That's my contribution. I have one question of the representative from elementary ed. Why did they come up with this when this is obviously going to mean a weakening of the bachelor's degree that their elementary ed students would obtain?
The New York State requirement is 30 credits in a concentration, not a full major. Other colleges more closely follow that and do not require a full other major. Our motivation was that trying to, you know, as the justification says, trying to accommodate the pathways, the CUNY pathways push toward fewer credits to graduation and graduating within a reasonable amount of time. That is 4 years or 4 years. And that is why.
It's an interesting rationale, but it translates as a desire, an effective desire, to weaken the degree for elementary ed majors.
Any further debate on the issue? Any objection then to removing item number 5? No objection. So then we remove item number 5. We're back to the report. And Ken, I think you asked for unanimous consent on the report before that.
Yes.
Yes. So it's unanimous consent except for item number 5. Any objections? Okay, seeing none, that passes. Next item on the agenda is the Graduate Curriculum Committee. We're back then to debate on number five issue on the item Undergraduate Curriculum Committee, item number five.
A motion to refer that back to the committee.
Second.
All in favor? Aye. Against? None. Motion passes. The Graduate Curriculum Committee.
Steve Schwartz, Associate Provost. On behalf of Dean Bodner, I move the Graduate Curriculum Committee minutes of September 9th and ask for unanimous consent.
Any objections to unanimous consent this time? Seeing none, the motion passes. Item C, Nominating Committee Report, dated October 8th, 2015.
Hi, Sarah Wolf, on behalf of Marion Fish, who asks that this be passed with unanimous consent.
Any objections to unanimous consent? Seeing none, motion passes. All business. None. Let's go to item number 7A then. This is new business. This has to be done from the floor. This is the nominating committee, and we're looking for the election of a student to the open math and natural sciences seat. Any nominations from the floor? All right, seeing, no? All right, seeing none then, this item is taken off the agenda. All in favor, everyone? Thank you very much. Again, anyone who has not signed the preference sheet for electronic or paper, please come up and do it now.
Now we're going to only ask three calculators to be the mandatory math department. Nothing else. We should have a lot more.